Welcome to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. And all we do here is search the truth. Now, it might make you a little uncomfortable. And that's a bit of our tagline. Anytime you are uncomfortable, that means you're growing as a person. So it's something we have to remind our kids sometimes, right? Like, hey, you know, if everything just was easy and it was all and life was just very, very easy, then you would never grow. So...
Yeah, most of the stories we cover on this show don't necessarily feed our preconceived worldview. I find it very uncomfortable. We come here to discuss it anyway, and that is our that is our MO, our modus operandi. Welcome to the North American viewers who have changed their clocks over the weekend. This now is at a time that you are used to. Many of you have already changed or have not changed. We should be mostly normal, but what is normal?
And coming up on tonight's show, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the latest in Ukraine. Obviously, attacks happening overnight and early into this morning. Continued shelling of the Donbas region. We're going to talk to a journalist who just got back from Donbas, whose hotel was destroyed, literally like right in front of his face. Targeted, by the way. Clearly a target. So we're going to talk to him. We're also going to look at the very latest from the United States, ramping up its nuclear ambitions, putting together its new playbook, and really, really troubling signs about what the United States is hoping to do with its nuclear arsenal.
Plus, we continue to follow the conflict in Haiti. We have an interview with the opposition leader on this show, on Redacted, so stay tuned for that. And we're going to talk about how Google is influencing voters for the midterm election, which happens in a matter of hours. You might not think that what you put into Google is a manipulation. We're going to talk about whether or not it is. We have some shocking data for you.
We're also going to look at some new evidence that's been handed over to the United States Congress. There's a number of congressional committees right now, and they're about to prepare their new UFO report. There's a lot of people speculating that this thing is going to be a cover-up. They're going to hide this information. In fact, a number of publications saying they're going to suppress a lot of the information that they have because they think basically people are too stupid to handle it. For years, they've been hiding and covering this stuff up. They've been telling you that if you believe in this stuff, then you're crazy, even though they knew better and it was all part of their disinformation agenda. So don't fall for it. If you're one of those people that's like, oh, this is tinfoil hat stuff, then you are literally falling for what they tried to do to misinform you and to make you say that kind of stuff. So we're gonna open up some can of worms tonight on the UFO evidence that's been handed over to Congress. We have a special guest on that. So all of that and more. It's time to get uncomfortable on this Monday night. Redacted starts right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome on this Monday. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope you got to do a little, I don't know, relaxing.
relaxing whatever with the family. Whatever you like to do.
Whatever it is you try to do. I spent quite a bit of time doing some reading and was out in the garden. We had some friends, some new friends that were here visiting us as well. So we got to meet some incredible journalists over the weekend. So a lot of fun there. David was in his studio painting things I saw all weekend. So everyone, and painting it pink? I don't know.
Well, no, I didn't paint anything. These are just lights. What I'm doing is arranging the main studio that I'm using, and with the Captain America and all that, I'm like building out my studio using a Mac instead of a PC. So I'm in my living room right now, and of course I have to have color, so I laid some LED lights back here.
Wow. Nice. That looks nice. Yeah. Very festive. I had a big chore this weekend. I switched out the summer linens for the winter linens, and I feel like I might be Wonder Woman after that task.
It's an amazing
feeling. It's like a big job. Yeah, it feels so good.
We have a daily newsletter that we publish every day, Monday through Friday. First thing in the morning, you can get it if you're in the eastern part of the United States. It'll be delivered around 6:30 in the eastern time into your inbox. If you're around the world in New Zealand, you might get it at nighttime. Hey, we have viewers all over the world. Let us know where you're joining us from. Anyway, go to redacted.inc, not .com. It's .inc. And put in your your email address and you'll receive our welcome email. You must verify it, though. It'll wind up in your spam or your junk. You have to go find it. Click verify, and then tomorrow morning you'll receive the newsletter. And you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. We try to cover about 5 or 6 stories with a little humor in it as well, bring you up to date on the markets, what's happening with gold and silver and the overall markets, and some big news stories. We had a really interesting stories in the newsletter today. So please subscribe. Redacted.inc is the place to go and do that. You want to tell people about the community?
Yes, also at redacted.inc, you can join our community for just a small monthly price. And this is a place where we can communicate with you off of social media, off of the platforms that we are currently dependent upon, and let you know things that we maybe normally might not be able to say on these platforms. We had a conversation today about one of the stories that we're going to choose, that we're going to talk about you know, election results. And this is something that we have to be very careful about, even though we are talking about upcoming elections. You know, this is just more proof that big tech has a result that it wants from this election. And that's why we can only say certain things. It's crazy town. So it's awesome that we have a community that is separate of these platforms.
All right, let's get into today's top story. We're going to talk about Ukraine. It's one day before Americans cast their vote to decide whether or not they're going to throw out these warmongers in Congress. These are the people pushing for nuclear war, by the way. I mean, a number of members of Congress actively pushing for nuclear war. Remember, and remember, just about every member of Congress has voted to continuously send money and weapons to Ukraine.
Now, as I was researching the story we're going to do later about Google, I was just sort of searching around for, like, which members of Congress promote peace. And those are not search results you're supposed to see. It's like, these people support bombs all across the board, pretty much across the board. There's very few candidates that you can check that promote peace.
So, yeah, we got like 24 hours, of course, till you know, voting starts. We're already being told, of course, it's going to be many days until we get results, right? Because, you know, Pennsylvania could be 8 days, and now we're turning into a third world country suddenly. It's amazing, in 2022, we've reverted to like 17th century vote tallying suddenly in the United States. Anyway, overnight, the head of the U.S. Nuclear Command says that the big one is coming. That those are his words. The big one is coming. Actual nuclear attacks are coming. The Navy Admiral Charles Richard says, quote, this Ukraine crisis that we're in right now is just the warm-up act. And he basically says, and he's the head of the U.S. Strategic Command, he says, the big one is coming, and it's going to be very long before we're going to get tested in ways that we haven't been tested in a long time. And it isn't going to be very long before we're going to get tested in ways that we haven't been tested in a long time. And specifically, he's talking about the new U.S. Nuclear Posture Review, also known as NPR. Isn't that funny that it's also known as NPR?
Yeah.
National Public Radio.
Also, when you say the big one, because I'm from the Bay Area, we usually say the big one is the next big earthquake.
The next big earthquake.
That's what we mean. I'm much more comfortable with that than this version of the big one.
Yeah. Isn't that sad? Like, you're more excited, like, oh, that's better. So an 8.1 earthquake is better than...
Well, Californians are used to anticipating earthquakes, and we prepare for it. There is less you can do about preparing for nuclear fallout.
So specifically, he's talking about this Nuclear Posture Review, NPR, which changes our position effectively and allows the United States a first strike using nuclear weapons if all else fails. So that's good news. According to antiwar.com, the review says that the purpose of the U.S. nuclear arsenal is to deter strategic attacks, assure allies and partners, and achieve U.S. objectives if deterrence fails. So basically, it would consider the use of nuclear weapons in extreme circumstances to defend the vital interests of the United States or its allies and partners. So basically, hey, if all of our crappy weapons that have heretofore been proving themselves to be junkers, if those don't work, well, we're just going to have to rely on our nuclear arsenal. So, okay, guys, buckle up. Because at that stage, we'll know that those things work. And maybe they won't work because they're so old and they haven't been updated. Which is another big part of this thing, which is they want to spend $1.5 trillion to update and modernize our nuclear triad. So $1.5 trillion. So we can spend $800 billion a year on a U.S. military budget, but apparently all of our stuff is junky and has been sitting there collecting dust and doesn't work, as it's been proven. We're seeing this on the battlefield in Ukraine. How many of these things are being destroyed? Because they're just not working. And now we need to spend $1.5 trillion to update our nuclear arsenal while people suffer. They can't pay gas. Their rents are going up. They can't find food. So let's spend $1.5 trillion to update our nuclear arsenal.
And how do you test that, I wonder?
It on China. that's literally part of this. Because he says the National Defense Strategy names China as the most comprehensive and serious challenge. So let's, and he basically says Russia is just an acute threat. They're just a minor pinprick. China's the real issue here.
I mean, we've talked about many times how the bombs that were dropped on Japan, I think it was between 5% and 15%. Actually succeeded in detonating. It was like 85% fail rate.
And a mile away from the target.
But there's really, you can only test this in bits and pieces. I lack a fundamental understanding of military weaponry, but you have to think that we really won't know until we know.
Right. So let's give it a try. Let's see how many people are vaporized as a result of us testing out our nuclear weapons. China responded to this and issued this. It said, look, you know, again, nuclear wars must not be fought, according to Xi Jinping, because this is like in response to what the U.S. is saying about this new nuclear posture. Like, you know, the United States keeps wanting to deploy these nuclear weapons now to Europe. No, we can't do that. So, no, don't do that. Meanwhile, there's no end.
Well, and how bad does it make the U.S. look that we're sitting here actually talking pro-nuclear war when these other countries are like, no, we need to put the brakes on this. Like, these are the countries that we're like, these are the enemy. They're bad players, and they're the ones talking common sense.
Yeah, it really is striking. And of course, well, the United States is the only one to ever use nuclear weapons, so maybe right. not so striking. But we're seeing, you know, we keep hoping on this channel. We look for all angles of peace. One of my favorite websites in the world is called antiwar.com. I read it every day. So we are vehemently anti-war. We are vehemently pro-peace. And yet, there doesn't seem to be an appetite for it at all.
No, if you talk peace, you are a Russian propagandist.
You're a bot.
Period.
You're a bot.
Yes. Anytime you talk anything about peace, it's you're pro-Russia.
Yeah.
And we've just been watching that on, you know, on social media, and anything you don't like must be Russian, can't entertain it.
It's really disgusting because there doesn't seem to be an end in sight for this war. Overnight, Ukraine, backed by NATO forces, rained hell down on the people of Donetsk using American HIMARS, heavy artillery weapons. According to these reports, these were HIMARS attacks. This is the Donetsk railway station, totally destroyed. It happened in the early morning hours. This is in central Donetsk. Remember, this is now Russian sovereign territory, regardless of where you come down politically. It doesn't really matter at this point. Like, they voted overwhelmingly to become part of Russia.
They have documents.
They are now Russian.
Pensions. Right.
Yes, they have passports. This is Russian territory. Destroyed by NATO forces. So make no mistake about it, guys. This is World War III. I mean, you're looking at these images. Don't they just harken back to seeing, like, you know, the Blitz on of Britain, like burning buildings. Like, this is what this looks like.
It's awful.
This is World War III.
I'm just waiting for the white hats to come in and start, you know, helping clear people out.
The propagandists to arrive, the white hats.
Yeah, the white hats.
These attacks, by the way, have been going on for 9 years. Tens of thousands of people have lost their lives. And the Western media continues to hide this story actively. You try searching for it. It's hard to find. They continually hide the truth, and they try to blame it on Russia. I sat down with Wyatt Reed. He's an American journalist who just visited the Donbass. He was there. His hotel was targeted by NATO-backed Ukrainian forces just after he arrived. He had just checked in, and he went out to do some on-the-ground journalism, and his hotel was attacked. I asked him, what exactly is happening in this area? Here's what Wyatt told me.
Zelensky and his government was basically within 2 hours of getting to Donetsk. My hotel is shelled by artillery, by a I believe, a 155 millimeter artillery shell. It's a NATO standard shell, either coming from a French or a British howitzer. So that is, I got immediately just a small taste of what it's like to live there. You know, just watched my hotel being hit about 100 meters away from me. I just saw this huge firework kind of explode in front of me. And that was, you know, I was told out afterwards by some of the other people who survived, you know, were kind of relaxing afterwards, having a drink in this blown up hotel bar. And they said, well, that was your baptism by fire. You survived. Congratulations. Welcome to Donetsk.
Okay. That's your welcome. That's your welcome, Matt.
And this is the region that Ukraine is so-called saving, right?
Right.
We're trying to get them back by destroying them.
Well, and this is what we're, of course, being told, right? That this is all propaganda and that this is Russia attacking their own people in Donetsk. Think about that for a second. That's like, I don't know how to describe that. Again, that would be like New York attacking New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And what Wyatt told me, we were talking after, and he said, you know, I learned when I was there just to walk on the western side of the street, because we all know where the shells are coming from. They're coming from Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So when you walk along the street in the Donbas or in Donetsk specifically, you're making sure you're shielded because by the building. So if the shells come from the west, they're hitting the top of the building, and then the building is absorbing the blow, and it's going to fall into the other side of the street, the eastern side of the street, and you'll be protected at least in part. I mean, he's like, this is how you get to think about when you walk, and this is what people have been living with for 9 years in mm-hmm. this area. 9 years. So there's no appetite,
well, you know,
it seems like, for peace.
Well, and what's infuriating also is that you don't see CNN, you don't see Fox, you don't see MSNBC. They don't have reporters over there. And these guys are putting their lives on the line to bring us news. And they're marginalized. They're called Russian apologists, like on Twitter and stuff. These guys are destroyed literally every day by the mainstream media, who is not there at all.
No. And sadly, Wyatt told me, he said, if I was killed there, he said, they would just would get no coverage at all. And they would run some kind of story that says, like, Russian, pro-Russian journalist or something like that killed. And they would not investigate it and would not be reported at all.
Oh, right. Russian propaganda.
Celebrated in a way.
Oh,
I'm sure some people would celebrate it on Twitter. I guarantee it.
Of course.
Well, who was the lady that did that had like tweeted out something about like too bad that Wyatt wasn't in the hotel when it blew up?
Yeah, I asked him about this. We're going to have a full in-depth interview with Wyatt a little bit later this week. But he specifically talked about that Democratic member of Congress. I think she's running for Congress from Illinois, who tweeted after he talked about his hotel being blown up. He said, if I had been there a minute earlier, I would have been killed. And she tweeted something like, oh, I wish you would have been there a minute earlier. This is a Democratic member of Congress or running for Congress. Then there was no one said anything about it. You know, no one. And she only deleted the tweet. But there's no news coverage of it. Where's NBC News covering the horror? No,
that's somebody wishing someone else extreme harm.
Yeah.
And that person's running for Congress.
Can you believe that?
No.
We're living in troubling times, really troubling times. So there's some really interesting developments over the past 48 hours that I want to call our attention to. And the Western media seems to be carrying out some kind of new strategy, because they're all working together. The Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times. I'm always skeptical. As soon as all of these guys come together within almost like 24 hours and they start releasing trickle of this garbage news, you know it's coming right from the intelligence state. You know it's coming right from somebody's playbook. We're too smart for that now. Don't fall for it. So what are they saying? There's a lot of talk that the United States and Ukraine are trying to come up with a plan for peace. Okay? But you need to read between the lines on this. So the way that the Washington Post reports the story is that the U.S. is telling Ukraine to basically act like you want peace, but you don't actually want peace. So that people will continue to send you weapons and money. Sounds like a great idea, right? And it's exactly what the United States is doing and Ukraine right now, according to the Washington Post. So the Washington Post this weekend reported that the United States wants Ukraine to signal peace, right, with Russia, but to not actually begin peace talks.
This is the stupidest thing. I read this morning and was like, but other people can read this too.
Like, you actually pressed publish on this?
Right. And so we're supposed to make other people think that you might have peace talks so that other nations continue to send weapons and aids.
Yeah.
But they can read it too. And so can Russia. And so Russia's not going to be fooled by any faux invitation to a peace talk. What do they think? That you can invite them to a peace talk and then you don't show up, like ghosting a date?
Right.
That's ridiculous. Like, sorry, Putin left you at the altar.
Where's Zelensky? He was supposed to be. Is he getting a new green T-shirt? Where is he? He's supposed to be here tonight. Maybe he's hanging out with Ben Stiller. So, I mean, basically, to put it another way, just pretend that you want peace, right? Act like you want peace so then you can go on and continue asking for money and weapons. Like, no, I really want peace, but in the meantime, please continue to send me weapons and money. That's the strategy here.
Now, recall that Ukrainian President Zelensky signed a law forbidding peace talks in Ukraine, which at the time I wondered, why would he forbid himself from leading something? Why wouldn't he just leave the door open? Is it because he thinks maybe his predecessor might do something, but his predecessor would have the same right to repeal a law like that if by some miracle there was someone who was peace loving who became his predecessor? Who knows? It's such foolery.
It is. So the article says the request by American officials is not aimed at pushing Ukraine to the negotiating table, these people said. Rather, they call it a calculated attempt to ensure the government in Kiev maintains the support of other nations facing constituencies wary of fueling a war for many years to come. So it's not about peace at all. It's literally about duping other governments.
Well, because if you're a warmonger, you have to act like you're not. Like any other predator,
right?
Can't go around acting like a predator, right? This is what my dad calls Eddie Haskell behavior. Do you know what that means?
No, I don't.
But it's from Leave It to Beaver.
I know, I get it, but
it's like the guy who's so manipulative. He's like wheeling and dealing, but he acts like a nice guy when he's around the parents. All right, that's a dated one. That's a dated one.
That's a good old reference.
But my dad uses it a lot.
Still. I get that one.
Okay.
So glad you got that. So, I mean, it's amazing. And they're saying the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, I mean, are getting involved together in this apparent propaganda, because it wasn't just the Washington Post. Almost to the day, well, on the same day, it was the day, the Wall Street Journal coming right out with a similar report at the same time. So something is clearly fishy here. And we are too smart. You guys are too smart who watch the show to fall for this crap. Like, you're sitting back there reading the Wall Street Journal like, this is interesting. I saw a similar story earlier this morning in the Washington Post. It must be coming from the intelligence state. Here's the Wall Street Journal story. Top White House officials holding undisclosed talks with Russia. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan has reportedly been trying to avert an escalation over Ukraine. Oh, so Americans really want peace. Oh, okay. So they're actively working towards peace, but in the meantime, let's continue to send them weapons and money. That's the message. So here's Jake Sullivan, citing sources, according to the piece. According to U.S. and allied officials interviewed by the newspaper, Sullivan has been in touch with Yuri Ushakov, a foreign policy aide to Russian President Putin, and with Nikolai Pastrashev, who heads Russia's Security Council. The aim of the talks has been to, quote, guard against the risk of escalation and keep communication channels open, rather than to discuss a peace settlement for the Ukraine conflict, officials told the Wall Street Journal. This is literally the game plan. No peace, but we have channels open. Who the hell cares? It's like, what, Uhura on Star Trek? Like, open a frequency, Uhura? Like,
but don't get on it and don't do anything.
Don't do anything. Don't negotiate with the Klingons. Just open a channel. It's garbage. And then on top of it, the Wall Street Journal, this is my favorite line from this Wall Street Journal piece. It says, the Wall Street Journal sources refused to provide details on when the negotiations took place or where they were productive.
Or whether they were productive.
So, again, it's total garbage. They won't tell us where they took place or if they were productive. If they were productive, they would have talked about it.
Well, of course they were productive, because Ukraine is doing anything the United States says.
I don't think these talks happened at all. And if they did, the Russians would talk about it on their side as well. There would be, I just don't buy this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, the Wall Street Journal puts out a piece saying the U.S. has no choice but to support Ukraine for as long as it takes. That's another piece they put out. So here on almost the same day.
Yes, they do have a choice. There is a choice. Look at us right now choosing not to help in Yemen or
right.
Syria. Like, we're
or
doing
to
in, that.
Or to invade Haiti. We're actively invading Haiti right now. We have a choice whether or not.
Well,
we
from
want
the
to.
Very from the very beginning, I've been asking myself, like, we have sent Ukraine more than Russia's whole entire budget for a year. So if that's the case, how do they still need more? Do you know what I mean? Does that yeah. make any sense? Like, we've sent them Russia's entire budget, more than that.
Oh,
more
Russia's
than
entire.
Annual
yeah.
budget.
Like, military
yeah.
budget,
yeah.
you mean?
Yeah.
Yes,
more than more than Russia's annual military budget, we have now sent to
the
Ukraine.
The whole country. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, because
well that's a staggering
well,
number.
If you think about it, only 10% of that money is going anywhere. I mean, it's we don't even know where it's going. So no wonder we have to keep sending more of it. Because, you know, it's like you're just filling up a cup and it's just spilling over to the sides because no one knows where it's going. It's going to the black market. It's not being accounted for. So that's why it seems interesting, this next part of the story here. Instead, you know, again, the Wall Street Journal says they're more interested in spending money and they don't know what they can do about it. So they're just going to stand by. The Pentagon says that they plan to support Ukraine for as long as it takes. And they're setting up a whole new command post for Ukraine based in Germany. So Ukraine operations for NATO from the Pentagon and NATO now being set up in Germany. Here's as long as it takes. Sabrina Singh, the deputy foreign press secretary for the Pentagon, told reporters the new command center will ensure we are postured to continue supporting Ukraine over the long term. She added the U.S. remains committed to Ukraine for as long as it takes. No, this will be to oversee the distribution of weapons to someone inside of Ukraine. It's all very fishy. I want to talk about the mercenaries here in Ukraine. Ukraine's army is almost destroyed. NATO is now relying on foreign mercenaries to fill in the ranks, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters, as we've reported here on the show, fighters from Poland, the UK, United States. And it's all very interesting that the United States is sending a one-star general to Ukraine to oversee everything. Why a one-star? This is the very question that Colonel Douglas McGregor was asked, was talking about with me just a short time ago. He says the whole thing smells dirty. Listen to the colonel.
You have this strange announcement that we are suddenly sending, after 8 months of no accountability, a few hundred soldiers under a brigadier general into Ukraine with the mission of somehow or another tracking all of the equipment that's being sent. Well, we already know that large quantities of the equipment have been sold off to others around the world, including ISIS. What is this really all about? I mean, we've been at this for 8 months. We've spent $65 billion, and now suddenly we're worried about accountability. This is beginning to look a little like an advance party for this very dangerous proposition that a multinational coalition of the willing, a force of perhaps 50, 60, 70, 80,000 Western troops, will eventually go into Western Ukraine.
Yeah. It's exactly right. So a one-star general being used for this, and now Lloyd Austin saying that we're about to send the best of the best weapons to Ukraine. So what we've currently sent apparently hasn't been working. That's been tested and died on the battlefield. And now we're ramping up and sending advanced air defense systems next month. So the Pentagon, you know, wants to get these advanced air defense systems by early next month. And they need these surface-to-air missiles. That's their goal. Because they know what's coming. They know what's coming in a few weeks as the ground freezes and Russia launches this massive invasion. So Putin, you know, sitting back, he's doing these speeches, he's watching this. He's watching Donetsk get hit and shelled, and it's been ramped up over the past number of months. It's gotten worse, of course, as we talked about over the past few days. And you know that hell on earth is about to be unleashed. And it's going to happen.
I mean, it looks like it already was. Images are shocking.
So we're just all watching it very closely. And of course, we've got the midterm elections tomorrow in the United States. So we'll see if anything changes in the next 48 hours, 24 hours in the United States. But there could be some major changes coming. We'll see.
Yes. Peace is
well,
not
can
on
I
the ballot.
Clarify,
go ahead.
I just want to clarify too, the budget that I talked about in September of 2022, the entire Russian defense budget for the year was adjusted to 4.7 trillion rubles, which is $77.7 billion. So that's their entire annual, just for the people that were asking in chat.
So we've sent 80 billion, roughly. The estimates are even more than that. But 80, if we want to go right. with just their numbers, it's about $80 billion we've so far sent to Ukraine. So yes.
Right. And 70, in 8 months.
In
compared
8 months.
To 12 months of $77 billion for Russia.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, where does all that money go? Where do all those weapons go?
I mean, that sounds like a winning number. You'd think it'd be over and done by now. But you're not really paying attention if you think that that is actually money that's going to
George W. Bush lost $10 billion in Iraq. Remember when $10 billion or $11 billion just vanished? They were like, we can't find it. We don't know where it is.
Hmm.
But the thing, like, to just that $77 billion to defend Russia for an entire year. They've got that in 8 months, and they can't they say they can't hold them back.
Right.
Like, that just makes zero sense.
Right. So they've literally lost, what, 20% of their country, 15 to 20% mm-hmm. of their country, now under Russian control. And almost the entire Ukrainian army is destroyed. So what do you get for $80 billion? Now you get mercenaries. And you get people from Poland. You get ISIS and Al Qaeda fighters pouring into this country. And of course, we said it would end up being till the last Ukrainian. That's what's going to happen here. Unless they push for peace, because it's going to be wiped off the map unless they do something. We've been saying this from day one. We've got more news to get to here on this Monday night. We're going to talk about the very latest in Haiti. We've got an exclusive interview with the opposition leader, Jimmy Chérizier, who is right now in the middle of attacks from the United States armored vehicles and the police of the puppet government that the United States backed government is attacking the fuel blockades. In addition to which, what would a U.S. invasion look like for the people of Haiti? We're going to get boots on the ground discussion on that in just a second. We're also going to look at Google.
We're going to talk about whether or not they are, in fact, perverting your search results around the 2022 midterm election.
That's right. We're also going to look at the UFO committee. So the United States has been actively researching UFOs. They're supposed to be putting these reports together. We should see it like any moment now. A lot of people are wondering if it's going to be a cover up and hiding of some really, really important information that was covered up inside, really important UFO documents and evidence. That we're going to be looking at. But first, I want to tell you about we are redacted.inc. If you go to redacted.inc, that's how you can sign up for our newsletter. Again, it's totally free. Be delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. It's a way to be and, stay connected with our community here by going to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you will receive that email first thing in the morning. Again, it's redacted.inc, not .com. It's redacted.inc. We're continuing to follow the violence in Haiti. Violence erupting in Haiti as U.S. military heavy vehicles are being used to attack the fuel blockade. It was being held by opposition leaders. Those opposition leaders keeping the fuel, of course, from U.S.-backed puppet government and the elites in Haiti. We understand there is heavy fighting that has been unfolding over the past few hours with a lot of people dead. We want to go to Dan Cohen, who is reporting for Redacted. He is live in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, with the very latest. Dan, what can you tell us? What is the situation at the fuel blockade at this hour?
Well, Clayton, the fighting has subsided now. The fuel blockade is open. It's over. The Varroa gas terminal is opened after weeks of fighting between the Haitian National Police and the revolutionary forces of the G9 family and allies, led by Jimmy Barbecue Chérizier. There was heavy fighting in which about, according to Chérizier, 40 people were killed. It's unclear if all of those people were soldiers from the FRG9, or if any of those were civilians who were casualties caught up in the crossfire. But the blockade after 8 weeks has been lifted, and Jimmy Chérizier has said that the blockade, that they're going to allow gas to flow.
So the gas will now flow back to the very people they wanted to keep it from, I suppose, right? Because it's not going to the poor people of Haiti who can't afford to get any of this gasoline.
Exactly, and this is one of the points that Cherizier has made is, well, let's see, now that the gas is flowing again, if things return to normal, because of course the mass uprising protests that we saw were initiated, were a response to the fuel price hikes that were imposed by the International Monetary Fund and the government of U.S. de facto Prime Minister Ariel Henry. So Cherizier's point was basically, well, let's see what happens now. You know, will schools reopen? Will life get back to normal? And it seems not, because still most people cannot afford gas. There are still numerous blockades. You know, I saw this morning there are still numerous blockades all over the poor neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince. So, you know, I don't see things exactly returning to so-called normal here in Port-au-Prince.
One of the things that's not normal in most countries, well, I shouldn't say that because it happens in a lot of countries, U.S. involvement, U.S. heavy weapons, U.S. military showing up. And that has certainly been the case in Haiti. You've witnessed a number of the U.S. armored vehicles. They continue to arrive. What can you tell me about the U.S. boots on the ground and U.S. military vehicles that are being used by the police against Jimmy Cherizier?
The armored vehicles that the United States and Canada delivered over the past couple weeks to Haiti for the express purpose of defeating this or overcoming this blockade on the fuel terminal are all over the place. If you just, you know, drive through the city streets near the fuel terminal, near the airport, you see them, these massive, enormous armored vehicles with heavy armor. And one of them in the fighting between the Haitian National Police and the FRG9 was put out of commission, damaged to the point where it couldn't be driven. There's a video of the one of these vehicles being pushed by a bulldozer. So the Haitian National Police, you know, clearly took some kind of heavy damage in the fighting.
Jimmy Cherizier also holding a press conference talking about this fuel blockade, and you actually had a chance to sit down with him. Can you tell us what he was talking about at the press conference and then when you had that one-on-one discussion with him?
There's been something of a misinformation or even disinformation campaign surrounding the events that led up to the removal of the blockade on the gas terminal. There's an article in CNN that cited an interview with a figure named Harrison Ernest, who was a confidant of Cherizier, and negotiated without permission, apparently, on behalf of the FRG9 with the government of Ariel Henry. And so the CNN article implies that these negotiations were what led to the removal of the blockade, but in a press conference on Sunday morning, Cherizier refuted these claims.
Nous, force révolutionnaire, Genève en famille et alliés, main une main et tout. Nous pas jamais négocier, ni voyer quiconque monde à négocier avec Ariel Henry. Nous prenons décision ça entre nous, la force révolutionnaire, Genève en famille et alliés, main une main et tout, pour permettre gaz la sortie. Et nous voulons pour le peuple qu'on est. Ce n'est pas une décision que nous prenons parce que nous négocions quoi que ce soit avec Ariel Henry.
Following that press conference, I had a chance to sit down with Jimmy Cherizier, known as Barbecue, and ask him what he thinks about a potential U.S. invasion of Haiti, and also for his response to UN and U.S. sanctions against him. Take a listen to what he said.
Sitting down here with Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, leader of the Revolutionary Forces of the G9 Family and Allies, who has been sanctioned by the United States, United Nations, and top figures in the United States government have said that he is the target of a possible U.S. invasion. So, Jimmy, how do you respond to this situation that the U.S. essentially wants to take you out?
No, ma'am. En Haïti, Haïti est un pays qui est indépendant depuis 1804. Son terre liberté. Et des salines sont gommées pour nous faire ça, pour nous être libres. Mais dommage, année après année, les gens qui viennent faire politique, ils ont fait mauvaise politique, ils ont détruit le pays. Ils ont détruit le pays et ils viennent rendre le pays viennent sous dépendance série de l'autre pays, spécialement les États-Unis. Et nous-mêmes, en Haïti, nous juste connaissons
Haïti son terre liberté li. Et nous juste connaît que Dessalines t'est toujours dit pour nous goûter jusqu'à dernier goutte sans nous pour nous pas jamais retourner dans l'esclavage.
So despite the appearance of normalcy here in Port-au-Prince, there are vehicles returning to the streets and fuel flowing out of the Varoux terminal. The U.S.-backed government of Ariel Henry has so far not responded to the protests and removed the price hikes that he imposed on behalf of the United States and the IMF. So what remains to be seen is whether this uprising will continue, whether Ariel Henry will keep these price hikes in place, and now that the pretext for a U.S. invasion, the blockade on the Varoux fuel terminal, has been removed, has been taken away, we'll see how Washington responds if it maintains its kind of bellicose rhetoric and stance towards Jimmy Charizier, or if things calm down. So here in Port-au-Prince, I'm Dan Cohen for Redacted.
Thanks, Dan. And some amazing reporting down there over the past few hours. And of course, with the violence and the bloodshed and the casualties, just goes to show you that the United States and Canada right now, it looks like they will stop at nothing to get that fuel flowing again for their puppet government. We should also point out that, you know, Dan caught up with the people, right, on the streets of Port-au-Prince and asking the people, like, what do you think about the coming invasion of the United States? What do you think about the U.S. involvement in Haiti? And here's what the people of Port-au-Prince, here's the people, what the people of Haiti had to say about it. Watch.
Mais je ne sais pas, nous même en tant que jeunes, nous disons non avec quoi qui passe aux Américains.
Blanc, pagé, droit, puis le sol là. Là, ils viennent là, car nous, ils viennent exploiter toute richesse nous. Par exemple, l'or nous, l'uranium nous, le pétrole nous, le bauxite nous.
Que vous êtes ministre, que vous êtes ministre, que vous êtes ministre, vous faites un habit.
Après ça, vous détruisez la production nationale. Vous quittez la maladie.
Américain, c'est le pote de notre pays. Américain, là, qui est plus de monde, ce papa.
Maman, Américain, a dit que la choléra, c'est eux-mêmes qui ont pas de choléra pour nous, on va faire on va salter.
Ça fait trois fois. Trois occupations nous prend, le pays n'a jamais offert de rien.
Vous êtes dans le pays, vous êtes dans le Jovenel.
C'est Américain, pas. Complice dans l'assassinat de Jovenel Moïse, faut Américain qui est entré en Haïti pour arrêter les gens qui ont été criminels.
L'Occident même, c'est un malheur pour Haïti. Ta même.
Continuons, blanc.
Et projet bourgeois, prostitution qui tire l'État. Je veux dire, nous ne pas de l'État haïtien, parce que l'État nous gagne là, son l'État anti-peuple. Son l'État qui peut travailler au profit du peuple haïtien.
So that's just
these are not images you will see on the mainstream media.
No. And someone in the chat said, this is old news. You showed this on the weekend. I showed that clip, yeah, on the weekend because I think it's important. So sorry if you saw that before. It's not old news. I mean, this is how people feel about U.S. occupation in Haiti. And, you know, that's not changing, and it's only getting worse. And of course, you're going to see more after this election, after the midterms here in the next 24 hours. This is arguably when the sourcing from the United States is showing that the United States actually will have a much bigger presence in Haiti. Waiting till the midterms is done. That's done. Now we move in. And that's the real concern here. Should also mention a correction to the Russian tanker. It was purportedly a Russian tanker. The call signs got mixed up. It's actually a Maltese tanker over the weekend coming from Venezuela, filled with Venezuelan oil. So it's important. It was not a Russian tanker, but a Maltese tanker using the same Penelope S versus a different letter. Nevertheless, showing you that Venezuelan oil flowing into that country. So when they're saying that there's no oil and no oil is coming into that country, that of course is a canard and is part of the lie that has been perpetrated by the West. So, so some big updates on Haiti. We're going to continue to follow it over the next few days. But literally, while Dan was there getting these images and fighting erupting and dozens of people being killed to break through that fuel blockade. So we'll continue to follow that story for you here on Redacted.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about how Google is manipulating what you see about the midterm elections. But first, we're going to tell you about our friends over at ScoreMaster. Charging higher interest is how banks make more money. You probably already know that because interest rates are on an upward trajectory. They take a lot of your hard-earned money if your credit score is just okay, but not great. ScoreMaster, though, is the science in accelerating credit scores, and they put you in control of your money, not the bank. So say your credit score is 700 and you're borrowing 500 grand to refi your home. Starting at ScoreMaster could save you over $75,000 over the life of your loan. That's 75 grand. That's your money, not the bank's. And that's the genius behind ScoreMaster's three-week rule, especially now with soaring interest rates. No matter what your credit score, before you apply for any loan product, auto lease, credit, whatever, start at ScoreMaster. It only takes a minute to get started, and you can add 60 points to 100 points in about 3 weeks. Life has enough regrets. Don't add paying higher interest rates to the list. Visit scoremaster.com/redacted for your special 7-day trial. Again, your special 7-day trial is waiting for you at scoremaster.com/redacted.
You know, people in the chat saying, why would they go to Haiti? Why does the U.S. need to intervene in Haiti, for crying out loud? Leave these people alone. And a lot of people from Haiti watching right now saying, thank you for doing the story and covering this. Well, thank you for watching. But why does the U.S. want to be in Haiti? The U.S. wants to be there, of course, because they get cheap labor. And so they can run and continue to have those sweatshops that support businesses. And they make ridiculously, they make a ton of money, of course, and to keep that, you know, those people in poverty. And of course, they can control. It's all about control. It's all about control and money. That's all it ever is.
Yes. And those people were mentioning a bunch of natural resources that I was not aware was bauxite. Available in those places, obviously.
As Putin said this weekend, the West has plundered Africa. It plunders these countries. It goes out. So it takes these raw minerals. Why do you think that China and, you know, and Russia are trying to get as many minerals right now to stockpile? Because the United States continues to plunder from these other countries. They have the natural resources to get themselves out of their own ground, but the United States has to go into Somalia, it has to go into Syria and steal its oil, it has to go into Haiti and steal bauxite and other things. So,
What I was going to say, if you ever see that the United States is saying, hey, we need to go, you know, there's a humanitarian crisis in Venezuela, people need food, they need basic human rights. Look for what it actually is. Follow the money, because it's always about a resource. It's always about money, you know, so don't ever think that we are actually out there with altruistic tendencies, because we're not.
There was a story. Wasn't there a story like a few months ago? Yeah, I don't know what country it was in. I think it was in Africa, but it might have been in South America. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. But it was a huge amount of resources that were just discovered. Like under the ground, like, oh my God, this country is sitting on trillions of dollars. And I saw a bunch of people on Twitter basically saying, hey, guess what country America is going to invade next?
Yes, I can't remember what it was.
It's like Eritrea or something. I don't know, but I forget exactly. If anyone in the chat can remember, let me know, because really, really sad. All right, we've got more news
to get. It's sad that that's our reputation. Like, we just steal your resources.
Yeah.
Look at pineapple.
And
right.
All right. Is Google politicizing your search results? In a word, yes, they are. We're going to show you some research that proves it to you. A Harvard-trained researcher named Robert Epstein, he studies search results for the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. And he has been screaming this since 2016. And his research has strongly shown exactly how your search results are skewed by political bent. He published a story all about this in the Daily Caller, but you don't have to just read one day's research, because, again, he's been publishing this for almost 6 years. Now, it's just not about what search is shown to you, although that is problematic. It is way more subliminal than that. In fact, today he says that so far he has preserved more than 1.9 million ephemeral experiences. This is exposure to short-lived content that impacts people and then disappears, leaving no trace. He says Google and other companies are able to use this to shift opinion and voting preferences, and we expect to have captured more than 2.5 million by election day. So these are things that maybe have come up in search results in maybe in the column or in other places that you can't necessarily track unless you screenshot it. Powerful messages. Epstein says he's been tracking these with his own software, kind of like a Nielsen rating box, for over 6 years. So he kind of likens it to Google's tracking you and he's tracking them tracking you.
So he started under the Obama administration,
yes.
Went through the Trump administration, now in the Biden administration.
Yes.
And he's been tracking it that whole time.
And so that is one now kind of newer way with these ephemeral experiences that you might see in certain places where you don't even necessarily remember where they are. He hasn't collated all of this data, but he expects it to be wealth of data to go over by election day of 2022. Of course, by then, you may have already seen things that manipulate your opinions and you just don't even know it. Another way that Google is manipulating search results is through suggested search. Now, they say it's to save you time. For instance, when you start to type something into Google and Google suggests the way that you should complete this, I just ran this example for you today, searching military budget 2022-2023. Now, they say, hey, we're just trying to, you know, save you time. But actually, they manipulate voters with these results. So if you're searching for something like, you know,
that's like Subway pre-making your sandwich as you're standing in line saying, oh, we think you need this extra healthy avocado.
Sort of like
there,
that. But, you know. Yeah.
Like we're looking at you and we're like, yeah, he could actually, he could have some vegetables.
Well, for any political topic at this point, right, they're going to put in things and you think, well, let's say the Pennsylvania Senate, the Pennsylvania race between Dr. Oz and
John Fetterman. Right.
You know, they can put in John Fetterman's name in a way that makes you think that a lot of people are searching for him in a positive way, or makes you think that people are searching for him in a negative way. And what is promoted to you might be what you click on, because you think, oh, well, I was going to go look for him and his COVID record, what he did during COVID. And then, you know, you get positive results and you think, oh, okay, I guess he was a pretty good guy around this. So Epstein actually found that Google can manipulate voters with these results from a 50-50 voter to a 90-10 voter. So they can convince you. This is called search suggestion effect.
Wait a minute. Wait a second.
So they take like someone who's a 50-50 voter and start showing them something.
Right.
For instance, the John Fetterman that
right.
I just gave you. If you're searching John Fetterman something, then it will suggest to you a positive search term.
To push me over the edge.
To
so
push
go from
you.
50-50, now I'm 60-40, I'm going to vote for this
yes.
guy. Now, but you also said 90-10?
So they'll
find somebody who's like, I'm 90% in the tank for Donald Trump. And they push stuff to me that then moves me down to 70 or 50.
No. They can take a 50-50 voter who's split
and push
you into a camp based on what you are searching. They say that they can start manipulating you from the first stroke, like from the first key that you put in there, right?
That's amazing. And so these are just, I mean, these are middle of the road and these are the target.
These are the target. Absolutely the target.
When you have 100 million people that don't vote in the United States and you have so many independent voters that are just sitting there, or swing voters, as they call them, who are just, they could swing either way. They're not really sure depending on how the mood.
Yeah.
So that's who they're targeting.
He doesn't say that's how they're targeting, but he does actually get around to what party they are favoring. But you could do this with any voter. If you had a voter who was on the fence about, say, Ted Cruz, you could push them in the direction of Ted Cruz easily if you wanted to as well. For instance, if you were interested in figuring out what Ted Cruz did during COVID and he took a nice trip to Mexico, you could say Ted Cruz COVID, and they could then suggest to you that Ted Cruz, was for a lot of open lockdowns or opposite of lockdowns, right?
Right.
Was for freedom of movement,
it's known as freedom.
Yes. So, you know, they could present you with either or.
Right.
And so, yes.
But Does the show data show that it was biased in one direction or another? Or
we are going to get to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Another, you know, as you can see from the search that I ran, and here's just a screenshot of that, there is also a top box that gives you just the answer to what you're searching for without any more context. Now, how do they choose who gets to give me that answer? That answer here comes from house.gov, an official government source, right? That's called the answer box. Google calls it the featured snippet. Google says they get these from their own algorithmic ranking, but Epstein, the researcher, says that they can shift opinions by more than 10 to 30% by then search results alone based on just what they put there. And there are about two dozen ways that search is manipulated. This is just one of them. Because if you're searching for some, now I search for a lot of things that are controversial based on this show, and I am regularly just served up what the mainstream media wants me to think about those things. And you know, again, this is, it's easy way to find bias. He points out that Bing does it too, although less so in recent years. And there are about a dozen more ways that search is manipulated. Google admitted to such in 2018 when CFO Ruth Porat said in a leaked video that Google, this is a quote, will use the great strength and resources and reach we have to advance Google's values. Not your values.
Right.
Their values.
Well, we also, I mean, reported here on the show, of course, that the we know that the United Nations actively partnering with Google. We featured that story,
yes.
Right? To manipulate search results around climate.
Yes.
Right. So now they own the story on climate when you Google that.
Yes.
Same thing with the World Economic Forum. If you want to Google that or any, you're not going to find anything. It's all controlled by them.
Yes.
Well, and also, I don't think a lot of people realize that Google is actually a war contractor. They work on a lot of AI and stuff for these drones and things like that. So they are contracted by the government.
Yeah. Same with Microsoft. Same with Amazon. I mean, Amazon has a $600 million contract with the CIA. All of these guys, I mean, they work actively with them.
Now, Epstein's research further shows that this continued to influence voters, has continued since 2016, and swing voters.
Or you could swing sway voters. You could swing sway voters.
Yes. It does that pretty easily. And now the same thing seems to be happening for the 2022 midterms. Here's what he says. Our preliminary analysis of the data we've collected so far in 2022 are equally disturbing. In swing states, and especially in Wisconsin, Arizona, and Florida, we are finding a high level of liberal bias in Google search results, but not in search results in Bing, even though they did find that pattern in every election since 2016.
Wow. So right now, Bing is different than Google and search for, wow.
In several swing states, 92% of autoplay videos being fed to YouTube users are coming from liberal news sources. YouTube is owned by Google. Unless Google backs down, it will shift hundreds of thousands of votes on election day itself with those brazen targeted go vote reminders. And we will catch them doing so. Now, he points out he supported Biden in 2020, and he observed that a lot of media also was being served to support Biden. And in fact, Republicans agree. Just recently, the Republican National Committee sued Google over email spam filters. They're saying that for most of the month, nearly all of their email and all of their emails end up in users' inboxes, but not at the end of the month, which is their important fundraising time. And then for some reason, mysteriously, towards the last few days of the month, those emails end up in spam folders. Google's saying, we don't do this. We just, you know, sort of take our patterns and filter from user behavior. Mm-hmm. But this will be an interesting lawsuit because of what we can learn. If it's not settled privately, which I don't think it will be, unless they get some kind of injunction or they agree to something.
Well, this kind of reminds me. This kind of reminds me of like the whole Fox News fair and balance, right? So it's like, if you look at Google, probably 90% of your search results are going to be accurate and going to be good information that you can use. You're looking up recipes, you're looking up directions and stuff like that. So it puts in your mind that if you do a search on the part of the narratives that they want to hide from you or manipulate, that they're still being accurate because they're accurate every other time. And I think that's where they get a lot of people, because people trust that, because, and still people trust Wikipedia. It's kind of the same thing. So it's like, right, they only have these certain things, but whatever it is that they decide they want to push a narrative on, it's so easy to do. Like, I've been getting those go vote notifications on Google and in my email and everything all day today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're right on that.
But I think that the Republican National Committee seems to want to draw out Google for what they know and what their data shows and what they are actively doing. And you have to litigate for that. You can't take their word for it. So every time there's a lawsuit like this or there's an accusation, Google says, absolutely, we don't do this. It's just the algorithm. This is just, it's all being surfaced up, right? But we will know based on what is pulled out in discovery. So that's why I find that so interesting.
Yeah. Another big piece of this, because now, I mean, you know, you have Jen Psaki, right? So, because talking about lawsuits, right? So why, this weekend we saw former White House spokesperson Jen Psaki, who's gearing up for her new MSNBC show. She filed a motion because, you know, we're trying to find, she was on the podium actively talking about the collusion between the social media companies. Like, we call up Facebook and we tell them what to do, right? When we see stories, we call them and let them know about it. And so she was talking about this disinformation and misinformation, the collusion between the White House. And so,
well, that got her pulled into a lawsuit where the state of Missouri and Louisiana are suing the Biden administration because they claim that they blocked certain content around COVID during the pandemic. And so the attorneys general of both states are suing the Biden administration. And so she was subpoenaed in this case to do a deposition. And this weekend, her lawyers filed a motion to basically nullify that subpoena and say she should not sit for a deposition. This was the argument she made. Ms. Psaki has explained that complying with the subpoena and devoting several days to preparing for the deposition, as well as attending the deposition itself, would be highly disruptive to both her work and her family. In seeking the subpoena, plaintiffs merely dismissed the burden on Ms. Psaki as minimal and did not address any of these sources of burdens. Now, this burden exists for everybody who is deposed. It's hard.
I was going to say, like, do we get to use that as an excuse for everything now? Like,
is that, oh, well, I have, you know, a family and a job?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she literally says
jury duty.
She says
Amazon's coming today.
Amazon's coming
I have a box being delivered this afternoon. I can't be deposed. She literally says she's busy with her new MSNBC job and her family, and that being deposed would be unduly burdensome on her new MSNBC job.
Yes.
Should have thought about that before you helped, go against the First Amendment. Should have maybe thought about that.
Yeah, you should have thought about that before you got up there. You got up there and lied every day for a living.
And plus, she was a spokesperson at a time when the Biden administration was going really hard on, like, yeah, stay home, do everything at home. So she could make the argument that she could do this virtually if she doesn't want to travel to Louisiana for this.
But no, America needs to see her on MSNBC. Like that, we've been waiting. This is what I get out of bed for. Like, I've been waiting to see Jen Psaki.
Well, I cannot wait. I think that it would put the news network in a position of jeopardy if one of their presenters or anchors or reporters had been involved in information censorship. We know that's the case.
Right.
But to actually pull one of their on-air talents out and say, you've been manipulating information with social media, right? Then obviously that's a stain on the network. The network will pretend that it does.
And I just can't see her pulling the numbers they think she's going to pull anyway. She's going to be like, she'll be prime time for like 6 weeks. And it's like, oh, we're going to put you on the morning show. Now we're going to move you over to MSNBC.
Well, she's not going prime time. She's going to Peacock, which is their streaming network. Oh. And in fact, the the Vanity Fair screen that I just showed you, this article just came out this weekend. Can we put it back on the one with her on Vanity Fair? Yeah, that one. So this is a big wet kiss piece that I did read, and it's about how she's like still moving into her office at the DC Bureau and how she's meeting people, and the White House counsel is her bestie and they go for cocktails every now and again. And it's very much like the reporter's like, well, what do you think American people want from you? And she's like, they want someone who's an insider who just can like text up whoever and has everybody on my phone and I can just tell you what it's really like. And I was like, that is incredibly tone deaf. We absolutely want the opposite of that.
I mean, that's why this show,
not want an echo chamber.
That's why this show is so successful, is because, you know, again, we can't just call up, we can, but you know, to get people on our show, they're not going to want to come on our show because we're going to hold them accountable. So the people that are going to come on her show are going to all be in the tank for her and in the Biden administration.
Yeah.
There's no way she's going to have on someone who's going to challenge her. Can you imagine she has on someone who's going to challenge her authority and opinion?
No.
There's no one like that is going to be on her show.
Well, who? Peter Doocy?
So I bet you her first guest, I'm just going to say this, I maybe not, but I bet her first guest that she will have on that show will be Corinne Jean-Pierre.
I was going to say the same thing, that or Sean Spicer.
To talk right. about, yeah.
And we don't want in on that club. People who watch geopolitical news want real answers. And we don't want to see people who are chummy and just sort of in the know. It's like news anchors thinking they want you want to see them in like a fun costume because you like their persona kind of. That's super obnoxious. I want nothing to do with that.
I mean,
that.
CNN already proved how much people wanted to see their hosts behind the scene on CNN Plus. Like, we want to see them in jeans and t-shirts sitting on a couch rather than behind the news thing. No, people did not want to see that. They don't want to see that kind of stuff.
Here's Anderson Cooper, uncensored, hanging out with his dogs.
Right. Yeah.
No one wants to see
We're drinking
that.
A beer.
Now, in her defense, she argues that she didn't have any direct involvement with social media when she was in that job in the White House. She says she's already handed over the documents. She's produced what she thinks should satisfy this case. I did look to see if she's defending herself in this capacity when she was subpoenaed, because as a taxpayer, I'm not that interested in defending these private players through taxpayer dollars. The Justice Department is defending the Biden administration, so that is on our taxpayer dollar, but she seems to have a private lawyer. It still irritates me to have to defend the Biden administration for something they may have done that's wrong, but at least if you're a taxpayer in Louisiana or what is the other state? I'm sorry. Missouri. Then you're defending the other side. Now, interesting enough, the judge already knew that this would be burdensome on her and ordered the deposition anyway. So her chances at succeeding at getting this deposition thrown out are pretty slim. In fact, he ordered a whole cast of characters to appear in depositions, which was kind of surprising because it's still early in this case. And he said, I don't care if it's burdensome. I want to hear from these people, including other people who've been deposed. Fauci, FBI supertory agent Elvis Chan, Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, and they are also trying to get Nina Jankowicz. She wasn't deposed in this round, but she has been listed in all of these court documents as someone they do want to hear from.
For people that don't remember Nina Jankowicz, of course, she was the singing TikTok disinformation campaign expert. She was going to be the head of the disinformation
for the Department of Homeland Security. So I think this judge, he's not that interested in this I'm too busy argument, because again, if you let somebody off on the like I have kids and I'm too busy for depositions, that implodes a lot of future depositions. You know, the court knows depositions are an imposition. They are purposely that way. And if you ignore one, you can be held in contempt of court. And so I think she is going to have to do this. Whether or not we hear much from it, I don't know, but I'm interested. This is a case to watch because I think this judge is keen to get some answers. And I am too.
I am too. Let us know what your thoughts are in the chat below about this story. We're going to talk UFOs in a second and the unbelievable evidence that's been handed over to these congressional committees. We're going to show you some of that evidence tonight on the show. We're going to hear from a guest who was called by the Intelligence Committee and asked to hand over evidence. We're going to talk to that person in just a moment who handed it. We're going to find out what exactly he handed over to this UFO subcommittee. And will it be a whitewashing? Will they cover it up? We will get to that in just one second. But first, quickly, our friends at Moomoo. 10 years ago, one of the best trading platforms on the planet was created. Our show sponsor, Mumu. They are celebrating their 10th anniversary right now this month, and they're giving away some free money. I'll tell you more about that in a second. So Mumu is a $6 billion company. They have 18 million users. I use them to trade stocks and crypto and commodities. And so if I'm buying different gold stocks or uranium stocks, et cetera, I use Mumu. It's very clean. It's easy to use. It's user-friendly. You can use it on a Mac, Windows, Android, iOS. Best news, the best part of this is, you know, the market right now is really wacky. Really kind of crazy. So why not take advantage of these free stocks that they're giving away and not even trade the market? Just get the free stocks, sign up, keep your account open to let these stocks grow in value over the next year and just don't do anything with it. You know, you don't even have to trade anything right now. Just get open your account, get that 10th anniversary $10 bonus plus 15 free stocks valued up to $30,000 in value for a limited time. So celebrate Mumu's 10th anniversary with some free money. Get a $10 bonus and up to 15 free stocks valued up to $30,000 for a limited time. That is redacted.inc/Mumu. You have to go to that URL. It's redacted.inc/Mumu. Let's talk about UFOs and UAPs now. I'm still sticking by calling them UFOs, by the way. And we could be hitting some interesting deadlines where we may get some interesting information from the House of Representatives, the United States government, on UFOs. Our next guest is Michael Horn. He's a lead UFO investigator. He's the U.S. media representative, Billy Meyer contacts. And you were just contacted, Michael, by a U.S. House Intelligence Committee to help them to turn over evidence of photos that you have of UFOs specifically. I want you to tell our audience, first of all, what these photos show. We'll put them up here on the screen. And why do you think that they wanted to see these photos, the government?
Thanks, Clayton. These photos are historically unprecedented. Prior to our finding and revealing them, they had never before been seen. And what they show is an interaction in nine photos. I originally thought there were only five and four duplicates, but they're nine photos of a then top secret stealth interacting with one of the UFOs connected to the Billy Meyer case.
And it's very important because these photos are amazing. And they took place before digital cameras. This was, I think, in the early 1980s, if I'm not mistaken, correct, on the date?
1981. Exactly. And they were taken by... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. So these were... I'm just excited about this. It's a fascinating story. And the fact that the House Intelligence Committee reaches out to you for these photos. Did they ask for negatives, copy of negatives?
No, they didn't. What happened, in all fairness, I call different... departments, individuals. I reach out through emails and texts and what have you. And I had left a message for Representative Andre Carson, who was heading up this subcommittee. And I simply left a message saying, I have these photos. And I did not expect to hear back from them because they don't get back to me. I wonder why. So I was very surprised when I received a phone call from a woman. I didn't recognize her voice. It said area code 202. I was going to hang up. I thought it was spam. And she said something. And I took my finger away from deleting the call. And she said, we got your photos and the committee would like to see them. Would you be willing to send them over? Well, of course, I sent the digital version of the photos. And I have a correspondence with her back and forth, a few emails, not a lot, about her having received them, thanking me for them. She'll make sure the committee sees them. And then I sent her something else that she found very interesting, which was the prophetic information in this case from Billy Meyer. Connected to the U.S. Now World War III that we're promoting and provoking. And she said, well, I'll make sure this gets its way up the chain. I never heard back from that committee. I didn't write any more than that. And as we know, those photos were never seen. They've never been announced by this committee or any other government committee. They've been censored because they put to a lie this whole threat scenario.
Right. And so this is a very important part of this, right? We've been hearing from certain senators, Marco Rubio and others, that are the reason we're starting to hear, in my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the reason we're starting to hear more and more about this is they're trying to position this UFO threat to say that, okay, now after thousands of years of sightings, that suddenly now they are a threat to us. And therefore, and you always want to follow the money, right? Why? So now we want to build up Space Force. We want to build bases on the moon. These guys are now suddenly a threat to us. And here we have photographic proof from early 1980s showing these UFOs just interacting with a stealth fighter pilot, and nothing happened. And that has been repeated countless times by fighter pilots, where there's been no threat, no attacks, nothing like that for decades when these fighter pilots have interacted with these craft. Am I wrong, or am I overstating this?
I think you're basically right. There's been no photographic evidence or film or video compass. And these photos actually were taken by the lead military investigator in the Meyer case, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens. He'd been retired from the Air Force. He had been tasked with researching UFOs for the Air Force since 1947. He continued. He was told about this. There was communication. The extraterrestrials involved in this assisted him at Groom Lake, this Area 51 Groom Lake thing. He would have been shot on the spot had they seen him. He managed to take the photos and some out of there safely. We will leave that to people to figure out how that was done. So what we have here is a deliberate misleading, to put it mildly. This is done for weapons and war. And you know, when this whole thing first came out with Lou Elizondo and this threat premise, which I attacked right away, they then gave a committee 6 months to decide if this was a threat. This is not how the world works, folks. No highly technologically developed adversary is going to wait 6 months for you to discover it, let alone 70 years, so that our world, our civilization, could develop weaponry to try to combat a threat. And by the way, you mentioned UAP, and I'll just say this. This is another diversion. You change the name to phenomena. And of course, we have a world of phenomena seekers who just want to be sensationalized. And so all the people that follow that and walk down that road have helped to bury the truth of what this is about.
Yeah, we have the sound. This was Hillary Clinton. Well, we're not going to play here, but Hillary Clinton specifically saying, no, it's now we're calling them UAPs. Now we're calling them UAPs. She said that on I forget what show it was, Jimmy Kimmel or some show. And now we're calling it. You're telling us that we're now calling them UAPs. Like, sorry, sister, I'm still continuing to call them UFOs. A few more questions on this. So this House committee, we've got multiple committees involved in this. We were coming up against some deadlines for them to release these reports. It sounds like from the preliminary reports that we're seeing from the Daily Caller and others that there's really just a bunch of garbage in these reports. Nothing that we're really going to get excited about. And as you and I were talking offline, you say, we deserve this. Why do we deserve a trash report?
Because this has been turned into a trendy disinformation campaign. It has long been disinformation from the government. They've known since the 20s of the development terrestrially of alternative craft. And they've also known for a long time, 70 years at least, of the presence of other craft. But they know that there's no threat, which is why they can try to get the public stirred up. If there was a threat, we'd never know about it. So here's, you know, the bottom line on it, if you will. This has been turned into, answer your question, this trendy thing. If you go on Twitter, there's a UAP, site, Twitter UFO, Twitter UAP, because the people that follow this in the most dedicated way are wannabes and people who have no research experience, and they become the willing followers and sycophants who perpetuate the dead end thing. And now those people, as I've been telling you for 2 years, are all angry at the insubstantial, inconclusive, and irrelevant reports and information being leaked and all. Deserve this, folks. Here's the case. Look at these photos. Look at the composite from Jaime Maussan in Mexico of just from five of the photos of what was going on here. If you look at the Beamship Gallery photos, you're going to see the most phenomenal evidence that's been kept from you and that skeptics attack because it's too good to be true. How do you win that one? We get what we deserve.
Well, I would love to hear if the House of Representatives Intelligence Subcommittee gets back to you on these photos and any other materials that you have. I'll be waiting with bated breath on that. We'll be awaiting this report. We'll be, you know, dissecting it. And we, as always, continue. Michael and I have done a much deeper interview that I would encourage all of you to watch in our redacted conversations. It's our playlist here on our channel. You can check that out. A much deeper conversation about all of this. Michael, as always, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Clayton. Much appreciated on my part.
I love all the comments in the chat. So like, well, he's absolutely right. And others saying, oh, tinfoil hats. Others saying this is absolutely crazy. I love the back and forth on it. Seriously, I do. Because first of all, let's just unpack a few of these little things here for a second. It's part of a government plan, of course, to make sure that we talk about these things as conspiracy theories, right? This has been a part of their plan for many, many years, so that after the United States came out with, and you have Harry Truman in the White House actually talking about UFOs in Washington, D.C., and a number of presidents actually talking and confirming it publicly, then you had this concerted effort from the intelligence state to switch it around and to use it as convenient cover, arguably, to cover up secret projects. So now anyone who sees these things is crazy. You're absolutely out of your rocker. Everything's fake. You're foolish. And anyone who then would talk about it publicly would be, of course, I heard this from members of the United States military, U.S. Air Force pilots. And when I interviewed different members of the military, they told me, yes, we know that they exist. We're just not allowed to talk about it. If you talk about it, you get ridiculed.
Yes.
It's part of their plan. I mean, this is from high-level members of the military that I've spoken to. So you talk about it, you get ridiculed. Heck, I spoke to the pilot for Air Force One who would fly the president of the United States who witnessed UFOs. He said, we can't talk about it. If you talk about it, you lose your job. Mm-hmm. That's what happens to pilots who fly major aircraft.
Yeah.
That time has now changed, I think, over the last 10 years. Now that the bombshell New York Times story revealed and came out, we're starting to see more discussion about it. But again, the concern is, of course, these reports... I'll put this up here on the screen. I don't know if we have my laptop or not, but maybe we don't. Here we do. Bombshell UFO report to be a cover-up as officials fear public is too stupid for the truth.
Well, clearly.
So this, we'll see. I mean, if this new report comes out in the next day or two, will this bombshell report be cover-up because officials fear that you guys who are watching are just too stupid for the truth and that you don't want, you know, I don't know. That's what...
Or that we're just too stressed out.
That's what they're saying with all the censorship stuff around everything. We're too stupid to get truth. We're too stupid to get all the information. We have to have them make all the decisions on what we can see for us. Otherwise, it's just going to be chaos. People are going to be walking around with different opinions.
Right. How dare you have different opinions? You know, and so we wanted to bring the story to you because the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee is reaching out actively to different UFO researchers for materials on specific UFOs and specific stuff from the early 1980s, pre-digital photographs and stuff. So fascinating. I'm fascinated by it. So we wanted to bring you the story. Hope you have an open mind. Have an open mind. If you have a closed mind, then you really can't.
Do we have super chats about aliens?
Let me look and see really quick. I was kind of curious too. Are you, I don't see any. On Paranormal Post, are you still doing? I don't need to bring it up if you're not, but
yeah,
I was just curious if you had anything over there.
I do. Yeah, I've got a couple of stories. I have one more that we're about to publish soon here, but I haven't been as active as I should be over there, unfortunately.
Gotcha. I just wasn't sure if you were going to like deep dive into this a little bit more.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. I just don't have. Yeah, I don't have it. I have one more story I'm going to publish over there, and I've just been so slammed with everything with this show that I haven't had a chance to do that.
But yeah, okay. No alien super chats.
Do we have other super chats that you want to talk about?
We do.
Okay.
Henrik said, "Love your work on here. Hello from Germany."
Hello.
And then Joseph Broadbent, "Greetings from Australia. You guys do great work."
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rumpelgold, Clayton, I'd love to be on your show to talk trans issues from Rumpelgold.
Thanks, Rumpel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm down.
It would be good to get a perspective, yeah.
L. Antonetta Anderson says that subcommittee wants more money and the funding. The reason we did that story is because that's exactly what they want. And that's why I wanted to do the story. Like, we already know that UFOs exist. Like, they want the money for funding for more wars. That's why they want it. So yes, absolutely. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, and you know that like they want they really, really want this information to come out now. Like, is it just not too coincidental that all this information starts coming off when we launch a space force?
Of course.
I mean,
yeah. Right.
You know, so it's like, what is the hidden enemy that they can hide and give us fear that they don't even have to, like, nobody can go to space and report on it. Hey, Aaron Mate here from the moon, and I'm looking around here, don't see a single alien. You know, right. Like,
of course,
impossible.
They're a threat. So now it's
like
a threat.
It's like the best. Yeah, yes. And it's the best boogeyman they could have to get more money because we can't verify it like we That's can right. on social media with places on this earth.
They're gonna attack us. That's why we need more money for the military budget.
Yeah.
You guys,
and that's all the super chats.
I have to sneeze.
Bless you. Kazoon diet.
Okay. I couldn't hold that for that.
Did we at least
we at least get to hear it, or is that?
I think it's gone.
Wait,
did you already do it?
No.
Wow.
You guys kept going. It's an abort mission.
I would literally have to mute my microphone and step away because I sneeze so loud that I almost fall over. Like, I cannot stop my sneezes.
I was like, they need to stop this. Stop talking for a second. Then so itchy. Okay. Never mind. All right. Well, thank you for your super chats. Thank you for those of you who joined. For instance, Heat. Heartbeat? I saw it too fast. Sorry.
I just wanted to bring something up really quick. So when we were doing the story on Jen Psaki and all that, I looked up, I was just curious what the press secretary's salary was because I wanted to know how much it costs to sell your soul for misinformation. Roughly around $100,000 a year, it says, but it's anywhere from like 60 to a couple hundred thousand. Like it's vague, but we know that they at least make $100,000 a year. To do that. So that's what it costs to for somebody to be like, oh yeah, I'll lie.
That sounds pretty low, but then if you look at the career that she's launched herself into, that's like most in fact, this is the research around Lawrence Lessig talks about how if you run for Congress, you really don't make very much as a senator or a congressman in your first or second terms, but then you can make about three times as much if you leave and go to be a lobbyist. And those numbers are around $250,000 as a senator, $250,000 a year, which is not much in Washington, D.C. Sounds like an impressive salary, but not in Washington, D.C. But rate for those lobbyists is like $750,000.
Jesus.
That's not even mentioning like how much money you make off of your investments when you regulate the companies that you invest
True. Yeah, that is profitable. You're right.
And also think about this. Like they call this the revolving door because what happens is these presidents or the cabinets or whatever will go and they will offer deals to people. It's like, okay, if you do this job, so it's probably like, let's take Jen Psaki, for instance. If you do this job and you do it well, you're going to make this salary, but then we guarantee you a show on MSNBC where we'll kick you up to $1 million. It's not going to be on the government salary or whatever, but it's like they make these deals for other positions that they can get for taking the position that they like Pete Buttigieg. Give up the presidency, step out of the race, and we'll make you this secretary. But then after that, you can go into lobbying for this company because, you know what I mean? Like, they probably have a roadmap of where these people can go after they're in government for a while.
And she can command at least $15,000 per speaking engagement, like minimum.
Minimum, like $100,000.
For Jen Psaki.
Colin Powell used to get over $100,000 per speech. So this is the beltway. This is how it happens in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So the base salary, you're right, is not as impressive when you think about how expensive it is to live in Washington, D.C.
I can't get $2,500 for a speech, damn it. Like, what do I got to do?
You have to pay them.
Yeah. I'll do it for free. Come on. Feed me. That's all.
Kestamax 1 in our chat says, oh, come on. UFOs. Really? See, guys, I want you to understand. This is part of their plan.
Yeah,
this
I know you've already made the point.
No, but he's not getting it. You have to understand.
If he's not getting it, that's his problem. I shouldn't have to sit through it again. I got it.
You know, okay, you got it. If you understand it.
People, if you don't see the relevance of this as how this is the next military industrial complex frontier, that is why this is relevant. We are like anti-war here. They're going to use this to fearmonger you and get you on board for defending ourselves from space aliens.
Yes, so that's exactly what they're doing. And a base on the moon. That's exactly what they're trying to do to us right now. Don't fall
for this. We got 900 bases on Earth where we don't need to be. And now we're going to have 1,000 bases on Mars and moon and Jupiter.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it, guys. I got it.
You got to sneeze again?
No. But I'm going to sneeze loudly if you launch into this again.
Why Damien says, so what's the news about this big one? Oh, you missed the beginning of the show where the United States U.S. Admiral in charge of the nuclear forces is now saying the big one is coming. What we're seeing right now is just the small warm-up with Ukraine, but the big one is coming. The big nuclear test, what we're about to face with China, is coming. And so the U.S. is actively moving nuclear weapons into Europe and positioning them, and China responded this afternoon. So that's the big one if you missed that earlier in the show. You can go back and watch the beginning if you came in late. All right, everyone, that's going to do it for our show today. I want to mention that we do have a daily newsletter. If you go to redacted.inc, please subscribe. It's totally free. And once in a while, we will put in a UFO story if you can handle it. If you can handle it, that'll be in the once in a while. If I can convince Natalie to do a UFO story.
No, we did the UFO story, but then half of the story is you saying why it's not crazy to do the story. I'm with you on that. You don't have to. You got my buy-in, honey.
I think our audience is smarter, and then sometimes I see people saying,
don't argue with people who don't want to hear that.
I know there's a lot of things we say that they don't want to hear. I know. But I just don't want them to fall for the propaganda. I just want them to be, you know, that's the final frontier.
This is the only thing that you care about, what people think. Everything else, we're like, this is the information you feel like.
Just trying to help people. I just want them to.
You don't want them to be.
You need to be laissez-faire about this.
Okay.
You don't want them to be ignorant, not stupid. You don't want them to be ignorant.
I don't want them to be ignorant, exactly. And that's my goal. I've seen too much.
You can't fix stupid. You can fix ignorant.
Yes. All right.
All right. Let people feel how they want about this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Let them feel how they want about it. That's right.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Hey, tomorrow is midterm election.
Oh, boy.
Can't wait to see what comes of that. So we will be here for that, and most likely that will be part of the story for the rest of the week. So
I hope aliens land on the White House lawn then tomorrow during the midterm elections. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Okay.
Well, something to talk about. All right, everyone. Tomorrow we will be here at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll have sort of a look at what's the unfolding in the election preview and everything else, craziness around the world. Much love to all of you, and have a great night, everyone. UFOs are real.